Right now, when there's no leftover building structures or artifacts to tell us about ancient people who lived in North America, we can learn about their lives by searching for plants that they once used as crops. Natalie Mueller is an archaeologist and ethnobotanist at Cornell University who has spent years hunting for lost crops all over the U.S. Natalie, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, can you explain to us, Natalie, what these lost crops are?
So these are a group of several species that were cultivated by ancient people in eastern North America for their seeds in much the same way that we, you know, now cultivate things like corn and wheat.
And so name some of the names. What kind of plants are you hunting for?
Sure. So some of these will be familiar to gardeners and farmers because they're commonly thought of as weeds. So the most common one is goosefoot. Its Latin name is Chenopodium. And that one, any farmer will definitely have seen in their field. And then another one of our lost crops is a plant called knotweed, which is in the genus Pygum. That's also a really common weed. So during the summertime, pretty much anywhere in the eastern U.S., you can go and find members of this genus growing in a sidewalk, which is a nice little parlor trick for me when I'm explaining this to people. And then there's another one that's common name is marsh elder, which is a plant that grows in marshy and swampy environments. And then we have two little grasses that are going to be coming up pretty soon, spring maturing grasses called maygrass and little barley.
And part of what you do, and this is pretty amazing, some of these aren't as common and they're not popping up in farms, and you go on expeditions to likely places around the country and just go searching through the woods or swamp or caves trying to find the modern descendants of these crops, right?
Yeah, that's right. So for the past few years, I've been going out every spring and fall on collecting trips to try and document as many places where these species occur as I can, and also to collect seeds, because what I'm doing at Cornell is actually growing them experimentally to try and reconstruct how this agricultural system would have worked.
So tell us about the rise and fall of these plants. I guess these were people farming. They domesticated these, and since they stopped domesticating, they've gone wild again?
Yeah, that's right. So beginning around 4,000 years ago, ancient Native Americans started to domesticate certain plants. And actually one of the earliest domesticates was sunflower, which, of course, we still grow today. So that's not a lost crop. That's a, you know, remaining crop. And then some of these other ones that I just mentioned, people started cultivating soon after that, around 4,000 years ago. And they were really important crops right up until around 1,000 AD of the Common Era. And that's about the same time that maize, or what we usually call corn in the U.S., arrived. So that originated in Mexico, and as we know, it's a really productive, really amazing crop. And so gradually people started to grow that more and more, and the older crops kind of started to fall by the wayside. So nowadays, they're growing as most of them are sort of weedy plants, where they grow in disturbed locations or near agricultural fields and things like that. And we really don't know if they're completely wild plants, or some of them may have been, you know, descended from the earlier cultivated population.
So given that we don't have written records or pictures, how do we know that these were plants that were cultivated as food crops, say, 2,000-3,000 years ago?
Oh, we have lots of different kinds of archaeological evidence. And archaeologists started to find evidence for these lost crops in the 1960s. And, some of it we found in normal sort of archaeological context, like storage pits and cooking hearths. We'll find the seeds in places like that, sometimes in dense concentrations of, you know, up to hundreds of thousands of seeds of one of these plants in a storage pit. We've also found them in certain really good conditions in caves where there's dry conditions. We'll actually find baskets or bags that are full of the seeds of these plants, which is pretty cool. And then my personal favorite form of evidence is actually ancient human poop from dry caves, which archaeobotanists have dissected. And inside of these poops, we found the seeds of these plants. So it's sort of the smoking gun that shows us that people are eating these.
And I learned from reading about your work, a domesticated plant looks a lot different than its wild cousins, I guess, or descendants in this case. So what changes?
There's a few things that have changed with most of our wild plants that we grow for their seeds. And the biggest thing is that their seeds get larger. So that isn't just because people prefer larger seeds because you get more food from them. It's also because of selection that happens when we garden. So if there's any gardeners listening, you probably go through and thin out your seedlings a few weeks after you plant your seeds so that you don't have plants competing with each other too much. What that does is it selects for seeds that germinate and grow faster, and usually those are the bigger seeds. And it also selects for seeds that will germinate reliably. So wild plants oftentimes need certain conditions to be met in order to germinate, so they need to experience cold weather or soil moisture or pass through the digestive tract of an animal, but our domesticated plants will germinate as soon as they're planted.
Talking to Natalie Mueller from Cornell University about lost crops. These are things that were cultivated by indigenous people in North America. We're talking 1,000, 2,000 plus years ago. Not cultivated anymore. She is hunting for their wild descendants. Oh, we've got a caller, actually, Bill in Oregon. Bill, hi.
Hi, yeah. I'm a farmer. I grow aronia, also known as chokeberry, and I heard that the Native Americans used it as a medicinal crop. Do you have any findings on aronia?
Natalie, aronia or... go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, is aronia or chokeberry on your list of crops of interest?
So it's not within my study area, but I've definitely read about it in, you know, studies of the ethnobotany of the Northwest Coast. It's a really interesting plant, but as far as I know, it's not as important in the eastern U.S.
Thanks a lot for the call, Bill. So how do you figure out where, especially for the more elusive wild plants that you're looking at, how do you know where to start looking?
So one resource that I use a lot are what are called herbaria, or the singular herbarium. And basically what these are is they're like libraries, but instead of having books, they have pressed plant specimens, which in some cases go back hundreds of years. And a lot of times there'll be very detailed information about where those specimens were collected. So I use that information to go back and revisit areas where these plants were growing in the past. And at first I was just kind of doing that because it was a convenient way to try and find them. But it also has the added benefit, or it's interesting because then you can see how the distribution of these plants has changed over time. And, of course, in the past, you know, 300 years, there have been huge changes in the way that we use the landscape in this country. So many of the populations of these plants that used to exist are now gone.
And some of the plants you are studying and hunting for, I understand, are endangered now. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm the only one studying them, so I guess you'll just have to take my word for it. But the one species that I wrote my dissertation about, which is called erect knotweed, as I said, its close relatives are extremely common, but those are species that were introduced, or invasive species from Eurasia. And the native species is unable to compete with these in urban environments because it's less tolerant of being mowed with lawnmowers. And so it's disappearing from those landscapes where it used to be really common.
Reading your blog and just reading about how you are out there hunting, it seems like, you know, you almost have Indiana Jones moments where you find this holy grail you've been looking for. What does it feel like when you've stumbled on one of these hard-to-find plants?
Well, in the case for erect knotweed, it felt pretty good because if I hadn't found it, my dissertation would have been sort of endangered. So, yeah, that was I was lucky to find that on, you know, some of the places I've had success finding that are actually on private property. And oftentimes organic farmers, like my friend who's sort of taking care of the population that I talk about on my blog, will have the more rare weeds and things on their farms because they don't use as many chemical herbicides and things like that. So that's been a really, you know, cool place where I found a lot of those. And then it's also... The other one that I've talked about on my blog is this grass, maygrass, which is doing okay in protected sort of prairie environments, but it used to be really common along agricultural fields. And again, with the increased spraying of herbicides, it's now kind of uncommon to find a large stand of it. So it's pretty exciting when we do track one down.
I got to ask, these are plants that people were eating, you know, the ancestors of these plants a millennium ago, two millennia ago. Have you been able to eat any of these?
And I always get that question, and unfortunately, I haven't really been able to eat them much yet because for the past few years, I've just been trying to get enough seeds so that, you know, I make sure I have enough for my experiments every year. But I'm hoping that after this year, I'll have plenty of seeds to do a bunch of really large-scale cooking experiments and figure out the best way to prepare these things.
And are you recruiting people to keep an eye out on their property or when they're out in nature to try to spot some of these plants for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I also am working with a number of colleagues on this who are studying the lost crops in their own particular ways. So you can get information from the website that one of my colleagues at Ohio University has made called lostcrops.org. And if you want to kind of communicate with us about, if you think you have some of them growing on your property, or if you want us to send you some seeds so that you can try and grow them yourself, that's a good way to kind of get in touch.
And now spring's almost here, here and I guess where you are too. I mean, is this going to be prime hunting season for you coming up?
Yeah, for two of the lost crops, for maygrass and little barley, it is. So if they're, you know, plant-savvy people listening, they're probably thinking, well, little barley is not particularly difficult to find. It's literally everywhere. So I'll collect that sort of expediently wherever I see it. But I'll probably be making a trip down to Arkansas and Mississippi to collect seeds for maygrass in a couple months.
All right, Natalie, happy hunting, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Natalie Mueller, an archaeologist and ethnobotanist at Cornell University who spent years hunting for lost crops all over the eastern part of the United States.